Welcome. Hello, everyone. Good morning or good afternoon. Thank you so much for joining us today's PCI Water Cooler Chat. My name is Gosung Lee, Head of Business Development for Asia Pac. So today, we will be discussing clinical trials in Asia, especially why utilizing Australia is a good choice to support your packaging, labeling, and distribution needs. Before we get started, I just wanted to have a few housekeeping items to mention. First, please ensure you are muted so that we can all hear our speakers. And second, because this is an informal chat, we welcome and encourage all your questions. So if you have any questions throughout this water cooler, please ask them through the chat function on the toolbar below. Or you can text iMessage or WhatsApp me at +82108981960. Great. Now, I'd like to introduce our speakers, Andrew Castle, the general manager of our PCI site in Melbourne, Australia, and Rich Nelson, our senior manager of the global logistics. I'm going to hand over to Andrew.
Thank you, Kosong, and welcome everybody, either this morning or this afternoon, wherever you are. So clinical trials in Australia, it's great to be able to share this topic with you. And I guess to start with, the key to any successful clinical trial is to have a robust and responsive and efficient supply chain process, which enables consistent global supply. And Australia is actually one of the most mature markets in the Asia Pacific region for clinical trials. And the Australian drug sector actually invests more than $1 billion annually into research and development and outsourcing services. Australia is well regarded internationally for having world-class infrastructure, and we have a number of advantages which make it a destination for choice in our region. So first and foremost, we can get things done quickly, and we term that locally speed. In the Asia Pacific region, obviously, Australia is a good location. It's a close location compared to other continents, and Rich will be able to elaborate on that as we go through as well. We're only a couple of hours away on a flight, which means that logistics are easy to get in and out. But it's also good that we're on the similar time zone. We're on a similar time for the best part of the day, which means we can overlap for the best part of our day. We can communicate well with each other. And in addition, because we're part of the Asia region, we've got some good trade agreements that that means that we can actually get things to flow in and out and across borders quite well. And once again, Rich will discuss these later in our chat. So Australia also has a good quality landscape. And by quality landscape, I mean it's favourable to be able to do clinical trials in Australia. To elaborate a little bit more, to do a phase 1 clinical trial, which is first in human, Australia has quite a pragmatic approach around this, in that you need a certain degree of assurance, i.e. you need to make things to a GMP standard. You don't need full GMP certification in order to be able to commence a trial. And so we work closely with our clients and CROs to be able to do that. Speaking of which, PCI has really good relationships with all the local CROs. I don't want to make it just about PCI, but Australia is it's a big country, but not a lot of people. And so we actually know everybody. The network is pretty small here, and business is easier to get done because we can pick up a phone and we have a relationship with most people in the local economy. And so that's all those are good things about Australia in itself. But I'll just hand over to Rich now to be able to speak a bit more about some further elements of cost and some more about the logistics and shipping lanes. Over to you, Rich.
Thanks, Andrew. Good afternoon, evening, everyone. My name is Rich Nelson. I'm the Senior Manager of Global Logistics for PCI in the United States, which means that this is more of a coffee machine chat for me as opposed to a water cooler chat, as it is a bit early in my day. But I'm happy to have you all here, so thank you for that. Just to elaborate a little bit on some of the things Andrew was talking about, there are a lot of benefits to Australia as in general, and then additional ones that are opposed to
other countries.
Five minutes.
Could someone please make sure they're on mute?
I think it's sorted now.
So as I was saying, that there are certain benefits to Australia in general, and then there are other benefits that are related to Australia that are make it a better choice than other countries in the Asia Pacific region. A lot of people ask about using some of the more centralized or larger countries that might have more flight availability, such as Japan or China, as your source of the regional distribution for the area. And that doesn't actually work, because the regulations and the logistics around those two countries only allow them to ship to themselves. So once you ship drug to Japan, that drug is in Japan and it can only be used there. Same thing with China. Once you ship drug to China, it's there, it's in China, and it can only be used within China. When you ship drug to Australia, it gives you access to the entire Asia Pacific region, with the exceptions of Japan and China, which, like I said, need to have their own location. So you've got a centralized facility that can distribute to New Zealand, Singapore, Malaysia, Taiwan, South Korea, all the other countries in the area. They can all be accessed from a centralized location in Australia. And as Andrew alluded to, the relative distance is, so it can be considerable depending on where you're going. Australia is, you know, kind of far away from some of those countries, but that distance is an east-west distance. It's a north-south distance. What that means for you is, if you need to communicate with your project team, if you need to communicate with your distribution hub, your sites or your CROs are going to be in relatively the same time zone, and you'll be able to have an actual conversation and communicate what your needs are in real time, versus talking to someone in the US or talking to someone in the UK or Europe, where you literally can send one email, it gets to that place in the middle of the night. By the time they answer it, it's your middle of the night back in Asia, and you are just one email a day, and it's a 24-hour cycle to get an answer, and then ask another question and then get an answer, and now you're 2 days late in what you actually needed, as opposed to being able to have a real-time conversation because you're going from north to south instead of halfway around the world with your emails. Another thing Andrew mentioned, the concept of the trade agreements. The Asia Pacific region has what's called the ASEAN, the A-S-E-A-N, treaty, and they've expanded the original countries that originally formed the trade association have expanded, and they have added Australia. It's now the ASEAN plus six, and Australia is one of those six, and that gives you an additional layer of benefits as far as the logistics into the other countries in the region. So you've got relaxed customs, lower tax rates. You've got, it's not as an open window policy the way that the EU is or the US and Canada are, but it's very simple in terms of the requirements to ship into a different country or the time it's going to take to clear customs when you're shipping out of Australia into another ASEAN country. So you've got that benefit for you as well. And then there's the biggest factor that comes into play. Everybody knows that running a clinical trial is very expensive. We're constantly trying to figure out ways to save money. We're constantly trying to figure out exactly how much different things are going to cost so that we can give that information to you when you're preparing your budgets. Well, the environment in Australia is so cooperative for the running of especially phase 1 and phase 2 trials that if you do your manufacturing and then your packaging and storage and distribution, all those operations for phase one or two trials in Australia, you get up to a 47% rebate on the taxes that you pay against that. So if something costs you $100,000, there's the GST that's assessed against that, you get 47% of that back. So there's an opportunity for a massive amount of savings. And people ask me a lot, you know, is it cheaper to use a location in the US? Is it cheaper to ship directly to sites in some of the countries that you can do that to? And for all those reasons, that proximity reason, and then that cost reason, it actually would work out to save you a significant amount of money to do all those things out of a location in Australia. So again, if anyone has any questions, please feel free to type them into the chat message. I can see them pop up and we'll answer them as they come up. I did want to go back and touch on one of the things, Andrew, that you mentioned a little bit earlier. You know, everybody understands and knows that, you know, the regulations or the guidelines around the world are, you know, GMP, but every country has their own. Every country has like slight variations of what those guidelines are. So can you talk a little bit more about, you know, the IMP manufacturing guidelines specifically for Australia? And since I was just talking about the, you know, the phase ones and twos, exactly how would they apply to that?
Yeah, of course. Thanks, Rich. So all IMPs need to be manufactured to a standard fit for the intended purpose, the stage of use in the clinical trial. But there's also needs to be a degree of flexibility to support change as knowledge of the process increases. So the extent of process controls and characterization is intended to ensure that trial subjects are not placed at risk and that the results of clinical trials are unaffected by inadequate safety, quality, or efficacy arising from unsatisfactory manufacture. So when compared with marketed products, an IMP may actually lack repeat manufacturer events to demonstrate consistency between batches used in the same or different clinical trials. Full process validation and very detailed attention to adequate labelling for randomisation and blinding. So all of these factors can end up placing a strain on normal GMP processes and the authorised person for supply of the IMP. So PCI Melbourne, our facility is actually specialist phase one GMP manufacturing CMO with a focus on reducing the risk to the patient population while focusing on manufacture suitable for the stage of clinical trial. Does that cover that, Rich?
Yeah, absolutely. And then what about like the approval for the trial? In the US, we have what's called an IND. How does that? I know there's I think it's still called the Therapeutic Goods Administration that is your governing body there. What kind of regulatory approval do you need to run those trials?
Yeah, you're right. That's the Therapeutic Goods Administration, or TGA, is our local regulatory body, and an IND is not actually required for clinical trials in Australia. So details pertaining to the clinical evidence, toxicology and CMC are presented in what's known as an investigational research brochure, or IRB, to the Human Research Ethics Committee, or HREC, for review. So the HREC chairs both the scientific sub-review and the ethics review prior to any approval to proceed with a clinical trial. And in many cases, the CMC of the IMP is very brief. And in some cases, it actually leverages off the experience of a GMP manufacturer that can actually help provide confidence to drug product supply. So, we're registered with the TGA and we can help provide some CMC support through some of those early phase aspects. But there's other providers in and around Australia that can help with that too. All of which, the data that comes from the early phase process can actually be used to reinforce confidence around the drug product. So in some phases that can be used to start stability at that phase one and carry that through into the phase two. That's something that is used to help springboard or reduce the timeline for a clinical trial.
Great. So, Andrew, so I think we have a question from the audience. So one of the questions is that what advice or like what documents we need to have to import their IMP from EU or US to Australia, and then whether IUR is required. So I think the short answer is IUR is required. So can you just elaborate on what's the documentation and then what's the requirements they need to get prepared for them to import the IMP, especially from US and then from EU to Australia?
Yeah, sure. So there's depending on what the drug is, it depends on the permit that's required. So we actually hold, so PCI Melbourne holds a general permit for the import of clinical trial drugs into Australia, and that can help to fast track entry, and this can also help us getting your stock into a local depot ready to distribute as soon as the trial is approved. But the investigational medicinal products, or the IMPS, needs to have been manufactured in a GMP facility and needs to have been released for supply for use in clinical trials to Australian standards. That's a requisite that we need to be able to import it in. If you're using antibiotics, which are classes S4 or controlled substances, S8 or S9, any OGTR products, this can take somewhere between 2 days to 6 weeks to approve. If you have a biological drug substance, that can also need what's known as a BICON permit, and that can take up to 6 weeks to get approved as well. And all those applications can be done in parallel. And so does that answer the question around the permitting side of things?
I think so.
Just to add one thought to that BICON permit, Imogen, once you have it, you can keep reusing it over a period of, I think, 2 years. So it's not something that you have to get every time. If it's a controlled substance, again, that's a little bit different story. But that BICON permit, you can keep reusing over and over again for up to 2 years. So once you get it, then your shipments just kind of become automatic. Overall, the import process into Australia is incredibly simple. There's usually no delays with the clearance. Shipments arrive, you know, at the port of entry and usually clear on the same day or next day. There is an IOR requirement. Every country has an IOR requirement, and that IOR has to be, you know, either it has to be someone located in Australia, so either your CRO, the site itself, or in PCI's case, we can use Port Melbourne as our importer of record because they are licensed. I don't know, depending on what, if you're using a third party depot, you'd have to actually ask them if they're capable of that or not. But yeah, you do need to have an IOR for the actual management of the import process.
Great.
So I saw a couple more questions pop up. Yeah. This one's absolutely for you, Andrew. What are the timelines for HIAC and IRB review? How long does it take to get those cleared?
Yeah, they meet monthly, and the results from those come out up to a couple of weeks after that ethics committee has convened. Sometimes they're actually released on the spot, but you know, I'd at least bank on a couple of weeks.
So I'm going to skip your question just because Kai asked a follow-up, so we'll just cover his second question about needing whether or not a QP certification is needed. That's not something that you need for Australia. You know, Australia and the UK are obviously very much aligned, but the QP release is still unique to the European Union. You don't need that for Australia. You do need to supply some, you know, proof of GMP manufacturing, but it's not a full-blown QP certification where there's an audit trail and all that other background activity that goes into getting the QP release. So you do not need a QP release for shipments into Australia. All right, and then going back up to Josip's question, is it feasible to use Australia as a hub to perform clinical trials in the Asia Pacific for study that's not authorized in Australia? So can you bring your drug into Australia and use it in other countries? Absolutely. So the way that works is you just have to supply a letter with the shipment on its way to your third party or to your storage and distribution partner in Australia. You just have to supply a letter to the TGA with those shipments of bulk, explaining this material is entering the country. It is, you know, GMP manufactured material. It is going to a GMP storage and distribution facility from which it's going to be distributed to. And then you list out the other countries that are going to be involved. And that's all you need to clear customs. And again, you can move the material in and out, whether Australia is a participating country or not. So, Andrew, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
No, I think you've hit it on the head there, Rich.
I'm good with these logistics questions.
I'll just actually, perhaps one of the things which is a bit more unique about working on clinical trials in Australia is about labelling. So there are some specifics there. So investigational medicines need to be produced in accordance with the principles and detailed guidelines for GMP for medicinal products. And that's also known as Annex 13. And so our specific unique requirement is that we need to have a retest date on the IMP. So some things we just put a nominal 2 weeks on if there's no stability data available, but then that can be extended based on stability, or we can put a retest date in conjunction with the sponsor around that.
Does it, and that retest date has to be on every item, right? Like if, say, you've got a box of vials and you have a label on the outside of the box, and then you have a label on each individual vial inside the box, your retest date has to be on both, on the primary and on the tertiary package?
That's right, yes.
Yeah, that's a lot different than the US, where we don't need an expiration date at all. What about the data? Because we've talked a lot about running your early trials, your phase one and your phase two trials, and say, out of Australia. Can you then use that data? Are you able to get that data and use it in other countries to support, filings and approvals in other countries?
Yeah, can. So, yeah, phase one clinical trial, if it's running in Australia, some of the CMC data that can be gained from that interim data analysis. And we all know that the period of a phase one trial can take anywhere between 12 to 18 months to complete. And during this time, some of that drug product can be set aside for characterization, which is concomitant with the shelf life evaluation. And so at the end of this period, both clinical and CMC data can be used for launching a phase two study in Australia again or elsewhere.
So Andrew, one of the questions through text message is that, so question is, how early can an IMP, investigational medicinal products, to be dispatched to the site in Australia? So can you elaborate the timeline? What's the earliest timeline we can dispatch the IMP to the Australian site?
Sorry, is that how quickly can it be released?
Yeah, released to the site in Australia.
Okay. There's probably two prongs to it. So if it comes into our depot, by the time it arrives on site, we can release it typically within 5 to 10 days. Mm-hmm. And then we can send it to a site almost immediately after that. So we can arrange a shipment in parallel. And then, yes, things certainly can be fast-tracked where needed. We don't want everything on the fast track, but we do know that we are here to support those early phase trials as best as possible.
Great.
So we got another question in the chat box. Back to the conversation of labeling. Hi, Imogen. Do you need the retest date on labels for only Australian sites or for all Asia Pacific countries? So every country is, going to be a little bit different in terms of what they require on their labels. And what you normally would end up doing for, if you're using material for a regional distribution and you're using Australia as your hub for that, is that you'd have to go to whatever the highest denominator is. So if the highest level of requirements. So if you've got one country that needs it on the just the outside, but another country that needs it on the outside and on the inside, you're not going to keep separate labels or separately labeled stock for each individual country. You're going to do whatever you need to do for the highest level of requirement, and then everyone else just gets that as well. So if since Australia needs it on the primary and the tertiary, and you're using it for six other countries, if there's extra on the label, if there's more, say South Korea doesn't need it on the tertiary, they're not going to complain that it's there, because you can exceed whatever their requirements are. You just can't fall short of them. So that's why I said you have to design your label for the highest common denominator.
Yeah, I think just to add to that too, Rich, we can hold almost bright stock and then label it to be site specific or region specific as well. And it just depends on how the trial needs to be run. But that does come with different labeling episodes, which can just add a little period to get those customized.
So we do what we call just-in-time labeling a lot in the U.S., where we will put like an expiry date or a protocol code or something on partially labeled materials. You're saying you could do that. You can do more than that, though, right? You almost have like a just-in-time labeling or a just-in-time manufacturing, where you can actually have bright stock bulk that you can label at the point of distribution with a full label depending on the country. Is that what you're saying, Andrew?
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
Yeah, so how does that work exactly?
Yeah, so just-in-time labels can be applied as soon as. By the time things are manufactured, the dosing stability time is pretty short, just as you're saying. So yeah, we can just apply the just-in-time labels based on the information known. Get that out and then get the shipment sorted as well. And that's probably something else we haven't covered off. So if a shipment request goes in and things are in the depot, things normally make it to site or are dispatched from our location within 3 days of the order being requested.
And you can do that with any type of dosage form, solid oral dose, solutions, lyophilized, whatever.
Yeah, if it's in the warehouse and released, once the shipment request goes in, it gets processed as consistent for anything.
All right. Well, we're just about up against the timeline. So unless there's any more questions that anyone wants to type in with, I will say thank you again for your time. I hope this was helpful for y'all. Thank you very much to my partner, Andrew. Great working with you on this. And we'll head back over to Kosung for some little more business keeping.
Yeah, sure thing. So again, thanks so much to everyone for joining, for your attendance today. I see that some of the other questions we cannot cover through the text message. So we will follow with you guys by sharing some information, such as what would be the key documents you need to get prepared to import your IMP to Australia. So there are such a good question, other questions we are going to contact you through offline. And in the meantime, just since it's almost time's up, so I'm going to hand over to our marketing director, Becky, who are going to do some announcement. Becky?
Thank you, Kosung. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today. I just wanted to, I'm sorry, I'm not very prepared. Here's my slide. Can you see that now? So yeah. I just wanted to review with you guys our upcoming water coolers. So this water cooler will be repeated on Thursday, evening, so that our colleagues in North America can take part in the same topic and learn about the same topic. So that will happen on Thursday evening. That is going to be at 1 p.m. Pacific time and 4 p.m. Eastern time. And then coming up, our final water cooler of the year will take place on the 10th of December. And that's going to be hosted by our Vice Presidents of Sales, Quality and Operations for the Clinical Trial Division. That's Tim Roberts, Brian Keezy and Tris Evans. And they're going to be reviewing 2020 and looking at the trends and how clinical supplies will look moving into 2021. That's shaping up to be a really interesting discussion. So hopefully you'll be able to join us all by then. And finally, just to advise that this, by tomorrow, this webinar will be available on our website. We have all our past recordings of all our past events on our website in our water cooler section. And that is at www.pcservices.com/water-cooler-list. So on there, you can get the recording of this. You can also get recordings and white papers from other water coolers that we have done in this series. So that is it from me.
Quick questions from the audience is, what does your water cooler means?
What does what?
Water cooler means.
Water cooler.
So in a U.S. office, there's typically a break room where you can go when you have a moment where you stop working. Just to relax for a few moments. And there's usually a large machine that you can just get a cup of water from. And it's very common to just go there. And while you're getting your water, other people come into the room and you just have very informal conversations about whatever is currently going on, either in the office or in the world or in sports or what, just various topics of anything. So it's just an aphorism for just a very casual and relaxed conversation about whatever kind of topic happens to be on your mind at the moment you're at the water cooler and one of your colleagues comes to and joins you in a very impromptu environment.
Thanks for your great explanation. Great. Anything else or any last comment or question?
Well, this is Dr. Yosaki from Japan, and I just appreciate, thank you, Mr. Castle, Mr. Nelson, Mr. Lee, and Ms. Griffiths for your precious time presenting and coordinating the arrangement. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so unless we have any question from audience or ask comment, that again, I'd like to say thank you so much for your time and your attendance today. It was just much higher than we expected. And thank you so much. And then again, that as Becky mentioned, that we also prepare another like a great water cooler section going to schedule in December. So we hope to see you again in our next water cooler chat. Great. Awesome. Thank you, everyone.
Well,
thank you. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.